You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, Wake Up Hollywood. How you doing? This is your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. I guess we're not playing the music intro, but that's okay. Sam, you just caught me off guard. We're going to jump right into this interview. We got Alex Calise of the band Bat Farm. How are you, Alex?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Usually there's a little music intro. I actually made the theme song only using an iPad. So usually you hear that, but we just jumped right in. It's all good. How are you doing? And it was so good to meet you at our show a couple weeks ago. And you are engaged to my drummer's brother, who I love dearly. I love Ken. He's the man. So let's go way back, though. You grew up in Florida. Is that right?
I did, yes. Very good memory.
So how did you get into music? Like, how old were you? What was the moment of Zen that made you want to become a musician?
Oh, man. I don't know if there was a particular moment, but I was very much inspired by my dad. My dad is a fantastic musician as well.
What did he play?
He plays guitar and he sings beautifully. Yeah, it's definitely in our blood, the Italian blood. There's quite a few of us in the family who are artistically inclined. So it's really no surprise that I kind of went down that path too.
You're like, this makes sense. I understand this.
Yes, well, absolutely.
Where Italy is your family from, by the way?
They're from Naples and all over, I suppose. I don't know enough about my heritage. I actually just did a DNA test recently, and I found out all of these things. Like, I didn't even realize that I was West Asian and Balkan and all these other things.
Well, Italy is my favorite European country. I know a ton of about Italy. I've been there a bunch, and I just love it. So anytime somebody says they have any kind of Italian heritage, I'm like, what? This is amazing. Where? Who? When? How? So that's awesome. Yes. So your dad started playing guitar. Do you know what he was like into? What influences? Was he into like the Beatles, like My Shirt? Was he into like folk rock? Like what got him into music, which has somehow inspired you? There's no doubt.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's funny you mentioned the Beatles because that is his all-time favorite band. He actually went to go see them. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow. He said, actually, he went to go see them at Madison Square Garden in the, I believe it was the 60s with his sister. And he said that you couldn't even hear them playing because the girls were screaming so loud.
Everybody that's been to a Beatles show says that. And like, geez, you start screaming. That's crazy.
Well, I mean, I imagine that's what it would be like going to a Jonas Brothers concert or Justin Bieber, like when they were at the height of their popularity. I'm sure it was the same thing.
So I never told you this because we just met really briefly, but when I was doing my first record, you know, I was using this amazing engineer named Daryl Thorpe and another guy named Brian Vibberts, who I still work with, both of them. And so when I was mastering my record, I'd been in the studio for a long time. It was at Ocean Way, which is now called United. Yep. Daryl comes into the room and he's like, hey man, guess who's, who I'm working with next door. And I said, who? And he said, Paul McCartney. And I said, what? And he said, you're lucky because it's a closed session. So the entire studio is closed off, but because you're mastering your record and you're a client, you happen to be working across the hall. So like, as soon as he told me that, I made all these extra trips to the bathroom. I did end up running into him, and he invited me in to watch him record. He was doing Chaos and Creation in the backyard. So that was like my pinch me, oh my God, my favorite Beatle too. And he's just, so I have so much love for the Beatles, and I respect your dad so much because he loves the Beatles, and he must be raising you on Beatles music. So you started singing at how old? You must have been 4, 5, 6.
Oh man, I was very, very young. And then I went to a Catholic school. So singing at mass was a big part of going to school. So I kind of learned that I had a voice there, and I would always sing in church and stuff. And then I would always just sing to records. And I'm sure it was pretty much like your upbringing, very much so.
I saw that you love harmony, so you must have sung in choruses.
Yes.
Were you a soprano, alto? Do you remember?
I'm more of an alto, but I can hit those notes too, so maybe I guess like an alto soprano.
Okay.
But I love the lower registers, actually. And I think that's where, you know, my voice really sounds nice in the lower registers.
And then did you?
Nope.
You there?
I lost you there.
That's all right. No problem. So I don't know if you caught a question, fall in love with singing and just explore that for a little bit. How did you kind of start kind of exploring what you wanted to do in music?
Well, it's funny because first and foremost, I've always been a writer ever since I was a kid. Kindergarten, I was writing stories and poems and plays, all kinds of stuff. So at first with music, that was a way of facilitating my writing. And I decided to play guitar because my dad had inspired me so much. Like he would play for us and we'd sit around and listen to him, jam on the Beatles or play the James Bond theme. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And I'm just like, I want to be just like my dad. So, that's what made me want to do it. Cause like my dad's always been like my hero. He's like the greatest. So
we have a lot of parallels because my dad was also way into the folk scene. So like anybody from James Taylor to Paul Simon was his guy. You know, any of those like Simon and Garfunkel, that's what I was raised on. And he loved that so much. So he brought a guitar at home. So that's how I kind of got into it. How old were you when you first started playing the guitar? Do you remember? Do you remember that moment where you're like, I'm going to start playing this and kick dad to the curb so I can start playing this guitar more than he does?
I kind of messed around with it, you know, and I'd fiddle around with it when I was very young, but I didn't start taking lessons until I was about 11. And I'm mostly self-taught though. You know, it was weird because I when I was doing the formal training, I was more interested in learning the songs I wanted to learn. And then I kind of veered off and started doing my own thing. Perhaps that was a mistake. Because I missed out on some of the fundamentals, but
no, I did the same thing. I did the exact same thing. Sometimes some teachers, they want you to learn what they want you to learn and they don't ask you, what do you want to learn? And instead of like breaking it down and saying, okay, we're going to give you the simple version and then we'll step it up to the more complicated version. They just veer you into, you know, some places where you're learning songs that you don't care about. And I think that's like a huge mistake because I went through the same thing. So it's not a mistake because some of my favorite artists, they learn guitar in the same way. It's like they gravitated towards learning just patterns on the instrument that made them want to keep playing. All that matters is that you keep playing. So never think that it's wrong because your technique is not right. No, none of that matters because all that matters is that you keep playing guitar. That's all that matters.
Yeah. And it's funny because all these years later, I've been getting guitar lessons just in the past few months from a former guitar player of mine, because he's a guitar teacher. And he was like, it's really funny because you actually know of the quality, but you know what everybody's like, yeah, you pick things up very quickly. And I think it's because I have the fundamentals, you know, unknowingly, you know,
well, you're a singer too. You're a singer. So
yeah,
that gives you an advantage. That most guitarists don't have when they're playing the instrument, you know? One thing, I'm going to ask you this question because I find this super fascinating, being a singer that learned to play as well. I find it so weird that, like, when you hear a note and you're a singer, you just sing the note back, you know? But you don't really know where it lies on the instrument. You know the register, but with guitar or piano, when you hear the note, like, you know, you see it. You see exactly where you're hitting the note. So I honestly find it strange. Sometimes if I write a melody, I don't know if you do this, but I have to, like, play it on the guitar just so I can remember it, because you can't see melodies like that. Whereas if you write a melody on another instrument, you can see the melody and where it fits on the neck and what register it's in. So I find it kind of fascinating that the voice is like this invisible instrument. You know, you can't see it, but you can feel it and you know, do you have any kind of parallel with that? Because I don't ask that to many singers, but I find it weird. I think it's awesome.
That's actually a really interesting way to not forget your melody, for one. And I guess what's interesting about it too is that you can see what you can do within that scale vocally or, you know, guitar wise. So that's kind of cool. I don't normally do that, but that's something to think about for when I do write a melody again, you know, playing it on guitar after.
I do it to memorize the melody, because sometimes, like, if I write a melody, if I don't have a recorder near me, you have phone, it's a lot of your visual of the melody. Sometimes I'll change the melody days later thinking it was the same thing when it kind of wasn't, you know? So,
right.
Very weird. But let's talk about your creative process. When you're writing, do you start with lyrics? Do you start with melodies? Do you start with a groove on guitar? Do you start with, you know, a concept or a story? How do you kind of write songs?
You know, I wish I could say I did it the same way each time, but I don't. More often than not, I would say that the song is dictated by the melody. And being someone who loves a lot of the songwriters we were talking about before, like the Beatles, Todd Rundgren, you know, Simon and Garfunkel, it's so melodically driven.
Right.
You know, the song is all about the melody, and that's something I try to remember each time I write a song, because so often musicians, you know, that I've met, they forget the fundamental of a good song.
So true. And it's like, it's really, I find it to be the most important part. You know, at first you have musicians like, oh, you're a singer. Okay. Yeah. You just sing melodies. But it's like, when you put something together, it has to have, the driving force. You know, it just has to have, even if it's an instrumental song, it has to have a melody. And if it doesn't, it's just a bunch of chords with, like a mishmash. So it just not going anywhere. So it's weird, because, like, I find the melody to be like a steering wheel. So I love, and I also write in very different ways like that, too. So I love when writers usually write in a variety of styles and ways, because that's how you know their songs are good. Do you ever, like, come across a situation in life, or maybe it's a, like, an observation you see, maybe it's in, like, a mother and a son, maybe it's, you know, different, or a group of people that you draw, like, a story from? Like, do you find that that's part of your narrative as a writer, or do you write it, like, from your perspective of going through emotions or kind of sorting through the good, the highs and the lows of life?
It really depends on what I'm writing for. If I'm writing, you know, something artistic that it's going to be used for, say, my band Bat Farm or my solo project, then I'm going to be taking or drawing from personal experiences. But if I'm doing something that's for licensing, for like a film or TV show, oftentimes you are writing based on breakdowns. So oftentimes, like, music supervisors will tell you to write something that's related to a certain phrase or a word, and that's what you have to write. So it really just depends on the situation. But for anything to sound really emotive that I do, it's usually drawn from personal experiences.
I love that. It's got a truth source. You know, I love when songs or stories come from a place where it's real, you know, and I love that you also write with different, you know, scenes from a movie or a TV show, because that shows that, like, you know, you can write in any capacity, which is cool. Tell me about your band. You got this band, and I read your bio, and it's like, I love that you have this darkadelic concept. You know, you take, like, darkness and kind of turn it into light and turn it into, like, something ethereal or something psychedelic. Tell me how you came up with this concept with your band members, or kind of how it all came together. How did you all meet, first of all?
Oh, how did we meet? Well, it's a very interesting story, because we used to date.
Oh, wow. Like,
years ago.
Two of you, right? Is it two people? Oh, that's awesome.
And funny enough, he lives downstairs. We're in the apartment.
What?
Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
Very, and you met him. You met him. Yes, the guy that with the dreadlock.
Cool.
Yeah, he's awesome. Geez, like, Ken is like the coolest fiance in the world for, you know.
Oh my God, yes. Go eat your man with your ex-boyfriend and then let him live downstairs too.
Yeah. So Ken's amazing. But Yeah, we met through a mutual friend, and we ended up just hitting it off. We had no intentions of being in a band together or playing music together, but, you know, because we didn't want to, like, intermix too many relationships in there. It can screw up a relationship, obviously. So, but he's like, hey, I was wondering if you want to help me, you know, co-write this song for a horror movie. And I said, sure. So we did that and ended up getting placed. And we found that we had a really great musical chemistry together. So, awesome. Yeah. So we just, you know, ended up writing a whole bunch of songs that we meant to just have licensed, but it ended up, you know, we created a sound just from writing together. So eventually we broke up, and then, you know, we became friends again and started writing together again. And here we are. So
you're back to being a band after you broke up? That, man, you've gone through the ringer together. That is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a testament to his strength of character and just the kind of person, human being he is. He's a wonderful guy.
Well, and it's also like, you know, what's cool about that too, it's like you realize at the core of your connection, the music is the most important, which I love. You know, it's like I find that connection to be, I mean, it's almost deeper than a marriage, because it's like you're all experiencing this movement and emotional that nobody really on the inside of it. There's just right. some magic within that nobody can kind of get in between. So I have that same kind of reverence. And I think it's cool that you've gone through all those things, but that's got to be complicated. I mean, you have to have band fights at some point. Like,
oh, God, yeah.
It's just like, no, you.
Yeah, and we have no problem. Like, you know, there's no hiding emotions with him or I. Like, we're both so stubborn, you know, and sometimes pig-headed, and we'll, you know, get into it with each other. And because there's so much history, I mean, like, we've been playing together for well over 15 years. I mean, there's there's no keeping anything from each other. We're like brother and sister, I guess. That's like the best. Awesome.
You're like the opposite of the White Stripes, because Jack White's in front and Meg is playing drums and he's on the drums and you're up front. So that's pretty cool. Well, what do you want to play? Let's play a song.
Out, because it's a little more rockin'.
All right. Here's Get Out by Fat Farm. Yeah, that was slamming, man.
Thank you.
What a groove, what a melody. That's awesome. Tell me about the inspiration behind the song. Tell me the story about it.
So this song is about being a prisoner in your own thoughts. Wow. You know, a lot of the songs with this project are very like self-loathing and like introspective. And, you know, that's just something that I like writing about, because music to me, at least, is therapy. It's cathartic, as you know. So yep. I'd rather get the bad juju out than keep it in.
I actually respect that so much, because, you know, it's like, you know what happened today in New York with that shooting? I was actually thinking about it today.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, whatever baggage that person had, they wanted to inflict it on somebody else. And that's what I love about music creators. It's like they get that energy out of them and make something beautiful with it. So I think you should always, always do that, because it's only going to empower you. Just make something beautiful, and somebody learns from it. Somebody gets inspired from it. And how could you not love a song like that? It's so deep. It's like slamming. It's simple, but it's also beautiful, and it's got levels. Man, the groove is awesome. So who's playing bass on it if it's just the two of you?
Oh, well, it's funny because Dennis wrote the bass line as well for it, and he does a lot of writing, actually, for the project. We both do, but a lot of the music he also writes. He's a multi-instrumentalist. We, at least for the recording, we had a bassist named Keith Brinkley play on it. And he's out of San Jose, and he's just freaking grooves like a monster, you know?
I mean, it's awesome. I just started this like trio, and you know, you see my band, and it's got like a bunch of players in it, but like, I really love the minimalist bands so much. That's why I love the White Stripes. It's like, I love when bands are just two or three people and create this huge amount of sound, because it's just got fire. It's like this ferocity to it. It's just got, energy. And what I love it about it so much is it's like, how can just two people or three people make that much sound? You know, it's just like awesome. Were you doing all the guitar work? I love the harmonies and how the layers of harmony you have tucked back, and the production process behind this song.
Yeah, well, as far as all the guitar parts and everything like that, I tracked all of the guitars. Dennis might have done, I'm trying to remember on this particular song, if he did like some of the candy guitars, like we call them, like the production guitars. I can't remember, you know how it is, like during a record, sometimes like, did I play that? Did I not play that?
Right.
But we recorded everything. It was a combination of in our studio at home and Ultimate Studios in Panorama City with Charlie Waymire. He engineered it and produced some of it. And I'm very happy with the final product. It's very rocking. So
awesome. I mean, it's just grooving. It's got layers. You know, you can always tell, like I checked out some of your music before and I was like, you can tell when somebody's good with one song. You can actually tell with like 30 seconds. It's like,
thank you.
You guys have it, you know? So when you perform live, you have all these, do you find that it gives you more room to just kind of fill the space? And I ask this also selfishly, because now doing this side project as a trio, I find that like, I have to fill in a lot more space I can't lean on with having more people in the band. So I'm so curious creatively how you kind of, you know, go through that in a performance.
Well, that's a really good question, actually. And I find that a lot of it falls on me because, you know, I'm the person in the front.
Right.
And oftentimes, you know, just because the stages are that some of them are small, you know, Dennis gets obscured by me and my playing. So sometimes it's, you know, it's very nerve-wracking sometimes, because like you were saying, you got to fill up and occupy a lot of space, but at the same time, that can be a great thing. What's really Malone's, and it's a huge stage actually. So I was able to just kind of like go up and down, and because I'm very animated when I play and I beat the crap out of my guitar, it gives it gives me some license and some room to just kind of do my thing, because, you know, if we play at one of our favorite venues, like the Doll Hut in Anaheim, we're like this. So, I don't know how you can play with more than two people at, say, a venue like that. Sometimes it works to our advantage and we're light on our feet that way.
And do you, I'm going to ask like a gear nerd question.
Okay.
What guitar do you play? What's your guitar preference? And do you have pedals? Do you, cause like, I'm so into that world and I kind of almost obsess about it. And then I switch gears. And I'm like, no, it's not about that. It's just about the guitar and the amp. And I just want one pedal. And so like, you know, creatively, do you use like a pedal if you have, like how, what's your preference?
Well, my preference for the longest time has been like a Gibson Les Paul, but I have the advantage. Yes, it sounds so amazing. It's hard to beat the crunch and sustain of a Les Paul, but because I work for a few different publications, like I work for Guitar World and I work for Guitar Girl magazine, Music Connection, I do a lot of gear reviews. So luckily, I'm able to try out a lot of different stuff. So for example, I did a review on Walrus pedals. And I was reviewing their fuzz pedal, the Jupiter, and now it's actually made its way into my rig, you know, because I loved That's it so awesome. Much after reviewing it. So,
dude, we're like parallel souls because I'm obsessed with fuzz pedals. I have so many fuzz pedals; it's ridiculous. So,
do you like the Walrus one?
I have not played the Walrus, but I'll tell you my favorite one that I just got, and it's funny because. It's with the Octafuzz, the full tone Octafuzz pedal. Okay. I love that pedal. And then I just started getting, I mean, I've got the Swollen Pickle. I've got like a ton of fuzz pedals. I probably have maybe 12. And
wow.
I just got this one called the, I think it's called the Ultimate Experience. It's like a very Jimi Hendrix pedal. Like,
okay.
It's the only Octafuzz pedal that can go, you can go all the way up to the top of the neck and it doesn't fart out on the octave. Because sometimes the Octafuzzes,
right, yeah.
they fart out like midway up the neck. This one goes all the way up. But the funny thing is, sometimes when I hit it, it'll pick up AM radio. So I'll get, in the middle of a recession, I'll hit it and I'll get Spanish radio
random. Yep.
So it's just like, what is this? How do I get around this? This is my favorite pedal, but I sometimes pick up radio signals. So.
Yeah, some of you are like, you have a wire many times. But like I said, you know, I've been blessed in that, you know, because of the thing, my profession, like what I do aside from music, I have a lot of access to things, brand new gear and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm also a writer for Positive Grid. So, you know, I've been checking out a lot of their stuff too, or reviewing it. And yeah,
like somebody, you got the Walrus pedal and you were like, I love this so much. Tell me about why you loved it so much.
I love it because as fuzzy as it is, it's still very defined. It's like a defined fuzz. So, and it just rips. Actually, I've been using it in place of like an overdrive because the gain is so crazy. But I love that pedal from them. And also it's pronounced Sle, like Sle. And that one is great because it gives your guitar like a very radio heady, reverby sound. It reminds me a bit of the Memory Man. I don't know if you have experience with it. Yeah. But that's another one that I love. And then, I mean, I'm fairly minimalistic with my setup. But then, you know, I use like amp distortion also, and then just like, I've been playing a Fender Telecaster, and that was a guitar actually that I got, to review. And I'm like, I have to keep this thing. I'm like, you know, can you guys give me a good price on it? And you know, it just cuts.
They're the best.
Unbelievably. Yeah.
I actually love Strats and Teles mm-hmm. more than any guitar. Those are my two. And I actually just got fear and talk guitar nerd stuff, but the Paul Reed Smith, the John Mayer guitar, it's like the pickups are, I mean, I'll have to send you a YouTube on the guitar because the whole story behind it is amazing. And that's why it is so awesome. But one of my favorite guitars is a Violin Burst Telecaster. And I also have a Telecaster called an Esquire. I don't know if you know that guitar, but it's a one pickup Telecaster. It's what the Telecaster was made when it first came out, and it's also one of my favorite guitars. I just love I love Telecaster Strats and Les Pauls. I think everything else falls below that. So, but awesome.
It was funny because like the Telecasters, I've always associated more with, you know, country music because you see a lot of the country guys playing them. But when I reviewed this guitar for Guitar Girl magazine, I was so impressed because it cut through like no other guitar that I have.
Yep. Yep.
It cut through the mix unbelievably.
And you realize why it was the first guitar. You know, it's like, oh, this makes sense. It's just all the country guys gravitated towards it before anybody else did. So,
right.
Yeah, I love that. All right, let's play something else. What are we going to play next?
I guess we can slow it down. Let's do Now That You're Gone. Why not?
All right, here's Now That You're Gone by Bat Farm.
Thank you.
You ever listen to the Dead Weather?
Oh, that's one of Jack White's bands, right? Yes, yes.
It had a lot of influence. It's just awesome vocals, awesome songwriting, great arrangement. Just killer. Killer sound on the guitars. Tell me a little bit about the production on that song and kind of what that song was about, too.
Oh, so this song was actually about someone who had committed suicide. And it's talking about the aftermath of that and the people that are often left in the wake of people who do those things. So yeah, as far as the production goes, we did some of it, like the candy guitars, like I was talking to you before, the guitars, some of those parts at Ultimate Studios, and then like a lot of the chunkier guitars we did there. We did most of the heavy distorted guitars and stuff over at Charlie's studio. And
do you do a lot of things in the box, or do you do amps? Are you kind of mixing both? How do you approach it? You do a combination?
Yeah, we usually do a combination because we have a lot of like funky, strange sounds going on in our music, and a lot of that comes from, you know, there are some internal sounds like in Logic, and then we'll use Keyscapes or stuff from Omnisphere in the box. It's hard to get some of those sounds, you know, like on an actual amp, as you know. So we're doing a combination of both. And sometimes what we'll do is those funky sounds that we get in the box, we'll end up reamping that. Because, you know, when you're doing stuff in the box, it has the tendency to sound smaller, as you know.
Right. Yeah. I find that, you know, I just got a Kemper, you know, the Kemper profiler, the amp profiler.
And yes. It's
like, it sounds so big on my computer, and then you bring it into a studio and you're like, oh, this doesn't move wind like an amp does. Okay, I see. You need a cabinet. You need those things. That there's what I love, though, and I'm sure you feel the same way. It's like there's no replacing an amp. There will never be a replacement for an amp. But I love that there are all these new technologies so that, you know, like I always plug in to my computer at like 3 a.m. and I'm like wailing, but nobody can hear me because I'm either on my headphones recording or practicing. And I just love that there's a convenience with that part of this. Not around 40 years. I love that you're using those kind of like different technologies and combining them, because it just sounds like a huge wall of sound and cool layers. Do you ever just use certain guitars for certain parts, or do you kind of just use one guitar and kind of experiment with a whole bunch of different sounds? How do you do your layers or your layering of guitar sounds?
You know, it's funny because sometimes we'll just use whatever's laying around. Like right now I have my Les Paul laying around. So that's just an all around good guitar to track with. That's one of my favorite guitars to track with because it's just so full sounding. Anytime we're doing heavy distorted guitars, we're using, you know, like my Les Paul, or I have an SG. There's an Airline guitar that I have. So those are the ones that I'll tend to gravitate toward, you know, if we're doing some of the heavier stuff.
I don't know Airline. What?
So, and they do all like vintage reissues. So I have like a beautiful glitter gold guitar that I always get so many compliments on.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but I heard of them actually, or I became familiar with them when I worked for a company called GHS Strings a few years ago.
I heard GHS Strings. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You're a guitar nerd like I am. This is awesome.
I am, and I'm not. It's funny because I kind of fake it because I do so much reviewing for companies. So I just, out of necessity, I have to kind of learn and you know, review things. So, but it is funny because I've always been a plug and play kind of player. But since I've had to do this for work and I've had to learn a lot more about new technologies and everything, I've become by proxy like more of a gearhead or gear nerd.
I it's weird. Like I skim the surface because like whenever I meet a guitar nerd that's bigger than me in that world, as far as like knowing more stuff, I'm like, oh, you've read the manual. Like I don't read the manuals. I just try to like get sounds, and you know, like I don't even dial it. Like, you know, I was just telling an engineer that I work with today. It's like, when I play live, I don't even dial in my sounds live because it's not like a studio session. It's like, that's the only time I'm like, all right, I'm going to dial in a guitar sound in a studio because that's forever. Whereas a live show, it's going to come and go and nobody's going to be like, you know, your guitar tone 6 months ago, I really liked more than 9 months ago.
Yeah, no one gives a crap. Yeah. You know,
you can say shit. You can say shit. Okay. You're like, nobody gives a crap.
Crap. Yeah.
So let's play another song. What are we gonna play next?
Okay. I guess Snake. That's last one. So.
Here's Back Farm with Snake. That was slamming. I love that decay at the end. That was awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Ooh, chills. I got chills. I love that you write with such a great melodic sense and arrangement sense. And even just like, it's crazy that this band is just the two of you. But it's just such a big sound.
Thank you.
Do you ever just do tracks with just the two of you where it's like no layers? It's just, let's just be us. Or do you save that for the live show and you want to produce and kind of have layers on tracks?
We have a natural tendency to just throw the kitchen sink at everything, I guess. I mean, we totally have the capability, I'm sure, of doing that. But I think that's part of at least the sound of this band. It's very epic for the most part. You know, there's a lot going on. But
it's very cinematic. I like that you do a lot of songs that are like, that paint scenes. I mean, you can create movies. I always tell people, it's like, I always love when artists create songs and while it's playing there's a movie in my mind playing, because that's like my favorite place to go to when I listen to music, is when you hear songs that have this like brooding or like cathartic or ethereal, or like it just has feeling. You got a lot of energy in your songs. It's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
Usually write together, or do you write separately and then come together and put these into recordings? Like how does that work as a band?
You know, it used to be a very private thing to me. Like he would do his thing and then I would do mine, and then we would kind of converge at a certain point. But over the years we started writing. We both have very different influences, and different things to bring to the table. So it's always interesting when we come together.
Well, let's talk about that. Like I wanted to ask you earlier about your influences. I know you said the Beatles and Paul Simon, but who are your, like, your biggest influences that are actually influencing your style or the way you're looking at conceptually making music?
I grew up with a lot of grunge music. I'm a huge fan. I'm like 100% grunge girl. I love Stone Temple Pilots.
Me too.
Soundgarden. And that, you know, I just love rock. It's just so emotive, and it's just music for the counterculture, you know? And I've always been, you know, at least in my own mind, I've always felt like kind of an outsider in that way. And it's music that speaks to my soul.
Well, you know, you said Soundgarden. I only got to see Chris Cornell once and Hunger Strike, and Pearl Jam's like one of my favorite bands. They are like right up there with probably any band that I love more than anything. And I love Chris Cornell. Like, he's just got this amazing voice. Nirvana is one of my favorite bands. Stone Temple Pilots. I don't know if you ever saw them live, but I saw them maybe four or five times live.
Wow.
I saw Velvet Revolver's first show in LA, their debut show at the El Rey. It was so crazy. And it's so sad that those voices are gone, because they literally documented this time period. I'm sure you feel the same. Where I was like kind of coming of age and kind of felt like this power that was back in rock and roll that it doesn't really have anymore. But I love that you pulled from those influences, because those are some of my biggest influences. I just love them so much. So awesome. The second thing is, you said your dreams influences are different than yours.
Same stuff too, but he liked a lot of the like psychedelic music. Huge Pink Floyd fan. I mean, I love Pink Floyd too, massive Pink Floyd fan. But yeah, he introduced me to a lot of cool 70s music that, I mean, I liked a lot of that music anyways, but he even like introduced me and opened me up to some more artists from that time period. He likes a lot of 80s metal stuff. And yeah, I mean, but we both have like very varied musical tastes, but I think that, you know, our influences, they kind of come together to form something pretty cool.
And do you kind of find when you're writing in the studio together, or when you're rehearsing, do you kind of like, do you both kind of know when the song is ready? Like, how do you get to that place? Cause like with me, it's like, I'm always the one that's like producing the sets or when the songs in. Up and they go. It's like, and I just sit with these songs, and I love that. I actually really love that. But I also love when bands make records together and they just, there's this place where they all know it's finished. How do you guys know when the song, either in the when it's born phase or when it's recorded and finished, how do you guys know when it's done?
Well, it's funny because we're so in tune with each other, and it's funny. Like, I don't want to say like we're one brain or one unit. But we both kind of agree on that. You know, it's really funny because we have a lot of the same tastes, you know, and he has a very good ear, and I like to think I have a good ear too. So we both kind of decide on that at the same time. It usually happens.
That's awesome. And, you know, I have to ask you, your name is Khalees, which rhymes with Khalees. But you're a Game of Thrones fan. When that show came out, you had to want to change it to Khaleesi.
Yeah, right.
You're like, man, you're so close to that. Just one letter away.
Well, it was funny because I was the Khaleesi for Halloween a few years ago. I went as Alex Khaleesi, you know.
Oh, that's awesome. Kind of cool. That's awesome.
But she was an awesome character.
I you know what, I just love when there are characters that have so many layers like that. And I know since you write so cinematically that you draw some inspiration from characters like that when you see them. I want to talk to you about the music scene that you came from versus the LA music scene. How was that transition for you? You came from Florida, and were you guys playing out there for, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then you come to LA. Tell me what, because like I only know, I've played in a whole bunch of different cities, but the scenes, you don't really know a music scene until you live in that city or you've been there for quite some time to really know. So tell me what the differences from coast to coast are between the two music scenes.
Well, it's a little difficult for me to comment on that now because I've been gone for 15 years or so, but at least when I was playing there when I was a kid, even then it's just not the mecca for music. Like it's great if you want to play covers or if you play Latin music and you're in like the Miami area, but where I'm from, you know, in Fort Lauderdale, it's just very, it's a transient place. It's where people come to like, you know, hang out and go to the beach and listen to covers. It's not a place to become a rock star or pursue a career in music. It's just not. So, I mean, it was a great place to grow up, I think, because at least I was able to cut my teeth. There wasn't as much going on around there. So I just pulled myself and played guitar all day and wrote songs. So that part was great. Like if I lived here, I might not have become the musician that I am if I lived out here when I was younger.
Well, I always find that so weird that like, what I love about LA is exactly what you said. It's like, it's very original music centric. And I find it so weird anywhere around the country that it's so cover centric. It's like, there's so many cover bands and there's so many great musicians that have originals, but they're just stuck in these certain scenes where they're just playing covers. I know so many musicians are like, I make a good living. It's what I do, but they're killer songwriters, but the scenes don't provide that. So it's like, I don't know how it needs to change, but I feel like it needs to change because who needs 10 covers of pop music, you know, when you go to a bar? It's like, I find it so much more interesting when you hear original music. And I love that you made that journey to come over here because so many 5 or 6 of your songs. And it's like, I knew you could write right when I heard the first one, but it's like, now I'm getting these layers of your writing that are so deep and profound and beautiful. And, you know, I want to see you play live. When are you guys playing live next?
Well, we'll actually be in your hood May 2nd. So,
that's the show at the Mint.
Yeah. That's where we met. So that's a great venue.
Well, I'll have to come over there. And you just played Molly Malone's and you said there was a venue you play in Anaheim. Where else do you play in Anaheim?
There's a venue called the Doll Hut and we'll be actually playing there this Saturday. It's going to be a pretty big show, I guess. But it's kind of like our home base, oddly enough. The OC, they've been very, very warm to us.
That's
for
awesome.
Whatever reason, I guess. I'm LA, it's kind of like playing a fashion show sometimes, I feel. You know, it's like there's a bunch of stuff.
Well, you know, with my band where we're playing in front of 1,000 people in LA, and it's like you're like on top of the world. But now it's like this is 15 years later and like something like 30 or 40 people show up and it's like you still have to bring it, which, you know, makes you a better band to do it. But you're right, LA is it's weird. They're around when you're successful and you're new, but it's like they're like very highbrow when it comes to, okay, you're still around, you're still doing it. So, but it doesn't matter. All that matters is that you keep creating this great music because, as Steve Martin says, be so good they can't ignore you. That quote is just like what resonates with me all the time. So I hope you always keep making music.
Thank you.
And I need to write some music and collaborate.
That'd be amazing.
We definitely have to do some shows together because your band is awesome. And tell me, what's the name? What's
the Sound of Cancer before this? And the reason being, we're both cancers. Those are our zodiac signs. But people got really confused by it, and they're like, are you endorsing cancer or are you, you know, like a death metal band? I'm like, of course we're not endorsing cancer. You know, it's crazy. But it was too confusing for people. So we changed it to Bat Farm. A friend of ours had come up with the name and he wanted to do something with it. And I thought it was the coolest name ever. And I said, well, I'm totally bucking that name from you, dude. That's a cool name. Exactly. So we stole it from our friend, Eric Klein. So thanks, Eric.
That's awesome. Well, I hope he gave it to you with blessings and you didn't have to fight too hard.
He did. He's the man, so.
All right, one last question. Where can people find you if they want to find you online, if they want to check out your music? Give us all the links.
The actual official website is batfarmband.com. You can much find us on Facebook or whatever, /batfarmband.
Awesome. Alex, you're such an awesome guest. I always bring guests back every 9 or 10 months. It was such a pleasure to interview you, and I hope to not only see you play live, but learn more about your music and hopefully write some music with you, because I just think you're the bee's knees. And please give Ken a hug for bringing you to our
show.
And I look forward to a lot of great things from you. So, thanks for being a show. Thanks for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood, and we'll have to bring you back.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it.
High 10. Up high. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Alex Kalise, check out our music at batfarmband.com. We'll see you guys next week. Peace and love.
You're listening to Hollywood with Econ LA Talk Radio.